You know, back when we started this show in 2010, the Citizens United case, you've heard of that one. It had just been decided, and ever since that time, I've been meaning to devote an entire episode to it. I mean, it's all about campaign finance, our corporations, people, is money speech? Very important issues. Recently, I spoke to a fellow named Ben Cohen who convinced me it was time to talk about Citizens United, or actually about effectively repealing that case through a constitutional amendment. You see, Ben heads up an organization called the Stamp Stampede, which is just absolutely insistent that it's going to get money out of politics. What's really interesting is Ben's previous job. He made a different product and he had a different cause, and I'll simply mention that he also had a partner named Jerry. It's your weekly constitutional. I'm Stuart Harris, and it's all about dirty money.
You're listening to your weekly constitutional, underwritten by James Madison's Montpelier. Your host is Stuart Harris, who teaches constitutional law at the Appalachian School of Law in Grundy, Virginia.
The Supreme Court of the United States is the final arbiter of what the Constitution means. And we often make reference to that on this show. We often talk about Supreme Court opinions because, in one sense, they're the highest law of the land. Indeed, we spent an entire episode talking about that one on Marbury versus Madison. The episode's called Who Made You the Boss? And it features my buddy from the University of Tennessee Law School, George Cuny. Great episode. I assign it to my con law students. You should listen to it if you find it interesting. But is there any way around that? Is there any way to actually reverse or overrule or repeal the Supreme Court opinion? What if there's one out there that we just hate? Well, one of the most hated recent opinions by the Supreme Court was decided in 2010. It was called Citizens United. And in the simplest terms, it essentially allowed lots and lots more corporate and union money to flow into politics. Recently, my buddy from Montpelier, Doug Smith, who runs the Center for the Constitution, you know him better as the quiz guy. Recently, Doug gave me a call and he said, hey, you know, you really need to do a show on this group called the Stamp Stampede. They are trying to amend the Constitution to overturn Citizens United. Well, that, of course, piqued my interest. But what really piqued my interest was when he told me whom I'd be speaking to. So, Ben Cohen, who are you and what do you do?
Who am I? Well, I am a formerly fat nerd who met a guy running around the track in junior high where he and I were the last guys, half a lap behind everybody else. And then I went through college and dropped out of, well, I didn't go through college. I went through high school and then I dropped out of a bunch of colleges and then decided I wanted to be a back to the lander and that I was going to learn how to make pottery as my so-called cash crop, and I was a failure as a potter. Nobody would buy my pottery. And then I met up again with that guy who was at the back of the pack with me running around the track, and he had went through college and tried to become a doctor, and he got rejected from all the medical schools he applied to. And that was my friend Jerry. And we were in our early 20s. We said to ourselves, we're not getting anywhere in life. This isn't going to work. I'm never going to be a potter. You're never going to be a doctor. Maybe we should try being our own bosses. And we decided to go into business together. And the only thing we were interested in doing really was eating. And so it had to be a food business. And we ended up starting a little homemade ice cream parlor in an old, dilapidated gas station in Burlington, Vermont. That was in 1978. You know, we never planned on being anything more than this little ice cream shop in an old, dilapidated gas station, but one thing led to another, and the rest is ice cream history.
Well, Ben, on behalf of millions and millions and millions of people, let me thank you for failing at pottery. And well, thanks to Jerry for failing at med school, too.
That's good to know. Yeah, things worked out.
Absolutely. So how long did you all actively make ice cream? I don't think you're still doing that now, are you?
No, I was active making ice cream and in the business in general from 1978 to the year 2000.
And so now you're up to other things. What are you up to since 2000?
Starting in 2000, I started an organization called Business Leaders for Sensible Priorities, which was a group of 600 business people that were advocating for the government to shift spending from the Pentagon to social needs. We did that for about 10 years, and I noticed that the more I worked on it and the more time and resources I put into it, the worse it was getting. So I thought it would be better to stop and maybe it would get better. But it hasn't. But anyhow, I took a little time off and then got involved some with the Occupy movement. And, you know, as the Occupy movement was starting to get unfocused and, you know, shifting from, you know, a concern, a very focused concern with economic disparity and then getting into protesting most everything and anything, I started realizing that the common denominator amongst all the issues that Occupy was concerned with was the issue of money and politics. That, the reason for lack of environmental regulation, the reason for lack of regulation of the financial industry, the reason for, a failed energy policy is all money and politics, essentially corporations bribing our politicians with huge amounts of money. I started feeling like that was where I wanted to focus my efforts, because it is the root cause. I mean, they talk about money being the root of all evil. Certainly in politics, in government, our campaign finance system, which is known as legalized bribery, is the reason why the government is not serving the majority of the people, but is serving the corporations that essentially own the government.
Well, now, before we go any further, Ben, I just have to make an observation. Now, you're a guy who was a wildly successful businessman. I'm going to assume, without asking, that you did very well financially through your Ben and Jerry's franchises. You could have just become one of these elites, and in some sense you already were one of these elites. You could have simply contributed and, perpetuated the current system, made sure that you were protected and people like you were protected. And why did you not just take the standard successful businessman's path?
You know, it's interesting. I'm really there's a lot of people who end up asking that question, and it always, I don't know, it kind of, it's not that it surprises me, but I always think it's a strange question. The idea that a person's sense of justice and fairness and what's right doesn't necessarily change just because a person ends up having a bunch of money. The world does not necessarily need to operate based on everybody advocating for their own narrow self-interest.
Well, I have to point out a little bit of an irony there, though, because the focus of a bunch of your concern lately is that money corrupts politics, but you seem to be an individual, at least, who has not been corrupted by money.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of people who have not been corrupted by money.
So we don't have to give up on humanity quite yet.
Right. I think the majority of people have not been corrupted. They talk about us being a religious nation. I mean, you look at the Bible, you look at anything that any of the major religions are teaching, it's all about helping others, taking care of others. I mean, this thing they teach you about in elementary school, you know, brotherhood, fairness, you know, one person, one vote, we're all equal. I mean, what can I say? I bought all that stuff. I believe it. I want to work to make that happen. I mean, otherwise, they shouldn't teach you that crap in elementary school.
Well, it sounds like you skipped over the parts of the Bible where people were getting smited.
Well, you know, it is interesting. I did. I have a daughter who's now 24. And, you know, when she was a young kid, I used to, you know, I would read to her at night. And, you know, one of the books that we came across was this children's version of the Bible. You know, I'm starting to read it to her, and there's all this death and wars and, you know, God killing people, and it was too violent for both of us. Neither of us had any interest in continuing, and we stopped. I mean, that was kind of the early Testament. I mean, you know, the New Testament, you know, I think there's a lot of peace and love there.
And so you choose to emphasize the peace and love and avoid the corruption of the love of money.
Yeah. Yeah.
And now you want to spread that gospel, if I may coin a term, to the country at large by getting money out of politics. And how do you propose to do that?
Stamping it out. You know, it's interesting. I mean, the Supreme Court made two really unfortunate decisions that don't make sense. They were 5-4 decisions, and you know, you got to understand that some of these Supreme Court justices used to be corporate lawyers. And anyhow, they made one decision that said that money is free speech, and they said corporations are people. And what happened, you know, recently with Citizens United was the Supreme Court took both of those decisions, put them together, and said, well, if money is free speech and corporations are people, then corporations can spend as much money as they want to influence elections. And then recently they had this other McCutcheon decision that made it even worse. But the idea is that many rich people, you know, the wealthiest 1%, it's really the wealthiest 0.1%, and corporations are spending huge amounts of money to essentially give to politicians to get politicians to do what they want them to do. So the stampede is essentially monetary jujitsu.
We are using that's a great phrase.
To stamp money out of politics. And the way we're doing it is by rubber stamping this message on money. We have two major messages. One is not to be used for bribing politicians, and the other is stamp money out of politics. And the idea is that, no, the regular person doesn't have a whole lot of money, but, you know, there's a bunch of cash that flows through people's hands. And if we start churning money into media, if we start using it as a communications media, it's tremendously powerful because, you know, the average dollar bill gets seen by 875 people in the course of its lifetime after it gets stamped. You know, it gets passed around from person to person. That really adds up. I mean, if you stamp 3 or 4 bills a day for a year, you reach 1 million people. You create 1 million impressions.
It's your Weekly Constitutional. I'm Stuart Harris, and I'm speaking with Ben Cohen. You know him better as the Ben in Ben and Jerry's. Now, why are we talking to him? Well, it turns out Ben Cohen doesn't like political corruption. After the break, we'll talk some more with Ben, but first we'll have our constitutional quiz. Stay tuned.
It looks to me, yes, yes, it is. The door is opened. He's breathing hard. I don't know exactly why that is.
I'm sorry. I'm late.
Okay. Well, that's all right. That's all right. We were about to go on without you, but I'm glad you're here. It is, in fact, the quiz guy, Doug Smith. Welcome, Doug.
Sorry, I got held up on traffic on I-95 coming out of Washington, D.C.
And what in the world held you up?
Well, I was up in Washington, D.C., the nation's capital. You know, the place where there's taxation with no representation.
Well, that's what they tell me anyway.
Yeah.
And they tell me that on their license plate.
Yeah. So it's anyway. I'm glad to be here. Great to see you, Stuart.
Great to see you.
Fantastic.
I always do look fantastic, but I appreciate you noticing it from time to time.
You bet.
Okay, so what do we have a contestant here while Doug catches his breath?
Yes.
Who's our contestant?
This is Trent from Grenville, Kentucky.
Grenville, Kentucky?
Yes.
Where is that?
That is in Floyd County, Kentucky.
Floyd County, Kentucky. Is that in East Kentucky or West Kentucky?
That is in East Kentucky.
Tremendous. All right, well, Trent, here is Doug Smith, and he's going to give you a very hard quiz question.
All right, here goes, Trent. What is the purpose of the 23rd Amendment?
Oh, boy.
Oh, goodness.
He's going to give you some choices.
I'm going to give you four choices here. What's the purpose of the 23rd Amendment? Is it A, to lower the voting age from 21 to 18? Is it B, to repeal the prohibition?
Oh.
C, to allow the residents of Washington, D.C. the right to vote in presidential elections? Or D, to allow all women the right to vote?
Oh, boy. I think you need to run over those again, please.
All right. What is the purpose of the 23rd Amendment? Is it A, to lower the voting age from 21 to 18? B, to repeal prohibition? C, to allow the residents of Washington, D.C. the right to vote in presidential elections? Or D, to allow women to vote?
Okay. You got those listed now, Trent?
I'm trying to figure it out. Can you repeat it one more time?
What is the purpose of the 23rd Amendment?
Is it A, to lower the voting age from 21 to 18 years of age? Is it B, to repeal prohibition? C, to allow the residents of Washington, D.C. the right to vote in presidential elections? Or D, to allow women the right to vote?
Now, Trent, that's three times, buddy. That's all we do. That is okay. It. You have now exhausted your time here. What do you got?
Okay. I don't think it's the voting age, and the prohibition was the 21st, repealing it. And so I think the best answer, this is going to be a guess, is the C, D.C. voting.
D.C. voting. So you're guessing D.C. voting. But before we get there, you instantly knew that the 21st abolished prohibition. Is that an important amendment to you?
Well, I just remember it because at 21 you can drink, but at 18 you can't drink. So 18th was the prohibition, and 21 you can.
That's an excellent little trick. I'm going to have to remember that one. At 18 you can't drink, but at 21 you can. Fantastic. I'll remember that. Okay, so you're saying it is C, to allow the residents of Washington, D.C. to vote in presidential elections. What do you say about that, Doug?
I say he's exactly right.
Hey, well done, Trent. Well done indeed. That's excellent.
Yeah, you know, Washington, D.C. has had a storied career in America.
Yes, it has.
You know, they felt like they should be able to vote for the President of the United States, even though they're not really a state.
Right.
And so it happened with the 23rd Amendment.
Right. Washington, D.C. was not geographically located by the Constitutional Convention. They simply designated that it was going to be an area that was going to be for the federal city. It was going to be federal territory, so therefore not a state. No more, or exactly, in fact, 100 square miles.
Washington City.
Right, Washington City. And, of course, figuring out where it was going to be was a big story in unto itself. But, the long and the short of it is that no one really thought about giving the residents of that 100 square miles the same sort of voting rights that residents of states did. And so it took a long time before they could vote for president. And to this day, they still can't vote for members of Congress. And why is that, Doug? Why won't we let them in there? Why would we let them do president but not Congress?
Well, they actually have someone that they named to Congress.
Yeah, but that's not observing is not the same as voting.
You know, back in 1978, they actually made a run at kind of full state options for representation, but it didn't last. It had to be a constitutional amendment, and it just never caught traction.
Yeah, most observers, I think, though there may be many different reasons for this, think that the primary reason is political, just like it was at the Constitutional Convention. Most people perceive that the population of the district is relatively Democratic, with a big D, Democratic.
Yeah, it is today. I mean,
Today. I'm saying today, yep, right now, if we want statehood. In fact, I've actually heard people propose that they would give an extra congressional district to the state of Utah, which the population is growing there, and at the same time give representation to D.C. because that would presumably at least balance, because Utah is perceived as being a red state and D.C. is sort of a blue area. And so that would satisfy people, and that's the way these things get done. I mean, people are always concerned not just with the long-term constitutional issues, but what does this mean for the next election or for the next three or four elections? And so, understandably, people who are in the Republican Party are reluctant to bring in a whole bunch of Democrats in on the other side.
Yeah, and what happened was, you know, when they did pass this amendment out of Congress, the states had to ratify it. They just couldn't get enough states by 1985.
You can't get three quarters to agree on much of anything, really.
Yeah, so... You know, this is a prime example of it's difficult to pass an amendment to the U.S. Constitution. It only happened 27 times. 10 of those have been a Bill of Rights. 2 of those are related to prohibition. I mean, very few times have we changed our U.S. Constitution.
And if you think about the three right after the Civil War, those didn't even use the normal procedure. Mm-hmm. And so you're down to about 5 that, you know, actually did something and that actually got three quarters of the states to agree with them. In the normal way. So it's a very, very hard process.
And many would argue that, in fact, it doesn't change the Constitution. It enhances the Constitution.
Well, certainly the proponents would say that.
Yes, but I think there have been several instances where we had to change several things in the Constitution, particularly around suffrage.
Indeed, we did. And our wives and our daughters and our mothers thank us for that. Okay, well, thanks very, very kindly for Doug Smith, and thanks also to you, Trent, and congratulations, and give us an email at ywc@montpelier.org. Send us your T-shirt size, and very soon you will be walking down the street looking spiffy.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Doug.
Hey, it's the Constitution. I read it for the articles.
You're listening to your weekly Constitutional. I'm Stuart Harris, and today I'm speaking to Ben Cohen of Ben and Jerry's Ice Cream fame, who, since leaving the manufacturer of ice cream, has devoted himself to a number of civic causes, most recently to the cause of overturning Citizens United and getting dirty money, as he calls it, out of politics. The way that he's chosen to do this is through a campaign called Stamp Stampede, which involves people stamping anti-corruption messages on dollar bills. It started small, but it's grown into quite an undertaking.
We've now got around 15 or 16,000 people around the country stamping money. And, you know, you start doing the math and it adds up. And so this is essentially a petition on steroids, you know.
well, Ben, before we go any further, let me just comment that you have identified very pithily the constitutional issues. You know, is money speech? Is a corporation a person for purposes of the First Amendment or other constitutional rights? But before we get to those fundamental questions, which are really the focus of our show, there's that initial issue that I'm sure you've answered this question 1,000 times, but people are going to want to know, isn't what you're doing illegal? Doesn't it somehow deface the currency?
No, we see it as beautifying your bucks, decorating dollars, adorning your dollars.
But is the Treasury Department going to see it the same way?
You know, it's interesting. The Treasury Department is fine with it. They, you know, I mean, I've been doing this for, you know, I guess about 2 years now. And, you know, nobody's gotten in touch with me. I've been very public about what I'm doing. And, you know, we have an opinion from a lawyer on our website. We have another First Amendment lawyer who works with us. And essentially, if you read the law, which I have, it assumes that people are going to mark money. And it specifically talks about what you cannot do. It says that you cannot make it so that the money is no longer obviously money. You cannot change the denomination. You cannot glue it. You cannot cut it. You cannot punch holes in it. And you cannot advertise your business on it. But other than that, it's fair game. I guess it's free speech.
Very interesting. In fact, it's not only free speech, but there's another clause of the First Amendment that comes into play, and that's the petition clause, which you've already mentioned.
Exactly. I mean, the interesting thing about, you know, this type of petition is that it's very, very visible, and people see it all the time. Loads of people see it. You know, normally, really the only thing that a regular person can do to make their voice heard, to make their view known, is to sign a petition. And, you know, when you do that, you know, maybe if you're lucky, the target of the petition eventually sees the petition once. But in this very public form of petition, everybody is seeing it, and people are seeing it a lot of times. You know, the key to it is to get to critical mass so that people are seeing it as a matter of course in their day-to-day life. And we are getting closer and closer to that point. We were doing a search on the web, and we just kind of stumbled on all these photos that people who know nothing about our campaign had taken of stamp money that they had received as change or whatever. And they said, wow, this is amazing. And, you know, they tweeted out to their friends, or they put it up on Facebook or Instagram. And so it's quite amazing. It's really growing. I mean, I just got an email from a person down in Southern Vermont who went to, you know, a little mom and pop store and paid for her order with a stamp $20 bill and got a stamp $10 bill back as change.
Well, it sounds like you're making an impact. It sounds like it's happening. Now, let me ask you this. You're building a political consensus, you hope, that getting money out of politics is a priority, but now comes the next stage. What precisely do you want like-minded people to do? What is your specific goal?
Right. Well, you know, we are one part. We're a tactic that's part of a much larger movement that includes many, many organizations on the national, state, and local levels. And what we're doing is getting people to pass resolutions or ballot referendums in favor of amending the Constitution to say that corporations are not people and money is not speech for the purpose of elections. And so already, I mean, this has only been going on for about two or three years since the Citizens United decision. Already over 550 municipalities around the country have passed resolutions in favor of this amendment. 16 states have passed resolutions in favor of this amendment, two of them in the form of ballot referendum. That was in Colorado and Montana. And just next week, I'm going to be going out to the state of Washington, where there's another ballot initiative effort. And we're in the process of gathering enough petitions, enough signatures to get this as a ballot initiative.
You said this amendment. Do you actually have specific proposed language that you'd like to see adopted?
The one that I like the best is the one that says that corporations are not people and money is not speech. You know, there's been about 12 amendments introduced in Congress on this issue. Some of them only go so far as to overturn Citizens United, but, you know, our view is that there was a major problem even before Citizens United. But in addition, there are over 150 members of Congress that have signed on to one or another of these amendments. I think it's about 25 senators, and then the rest are members of the House. There is a tremendous amount of momentum. And as a matter of fact, it's just last week or the week before that Vermont became the first state in the union to call for a constitutional convention to get money out of politics.
Well, that's really interesting. That was going to be my next question. As you know, I'm sure, Article 5 of our Constitution provides two basic ways to amend the Constitution, but both of those basic ways end up with requiring three-quarters of the states to ratify whatever amendments there. So your ultimate objective, or at least your ultimate obstacle, is getting three-quarters of the state legislatures to agree with whatever you're proposing. But there are two ways to get to that stage, and one of them is to go through Congress and get two-thirds of Congress to pass your amendment. That's going to be tough. The other way is what you've just mentioned, and that is to get enough states to call for a constitutional convention. But I'm not sure you can limit a constitutional convention to just one particular issue. So you may be opening up a Pandora's box there.
Right. I've certainly heard that criticism or that... I've heard about that. You know, the stampede is interesting in that it supports any form of amending the Constitution to get money out of politics and any state or federal laws that we can pass along the way that'll help the situation. So I agree with you that the, you know, some people that are advocating for the constitutional convention route are saying that yes, we can limit the topics that are under consideration at that constitutional convention. Others I know are saying that that's not true. The reality is that we've never had a constitutional convention of the states, although we came very close once, and it was that pressure of that looming constitutional convention of the states that got Congress to act anyhow.
Understood. There actually are some people who are now claiming that if you add up all the various resolutions passed by all the various state legislatures over the past several decades, that you actually get to the magic number. And the state of Michigan recently called for a constitutional convention, and that put us over the top. Now, there are lots of other people who are saying, not so fast, we don't think that's true. But in the context of that discussion, people have repeatedly pointed out, this or that state may have asked for a convention for a specific purpose, but once it happens, Katie bar the door. I'm not saying that to discourage you. I'm simply pointing out the issue. You mentioned before the Occupy movement, and I have to, again, I don't mean to be critical, but I have to draw a parallel. Occupy did seem to have some common concerns, economic inequality, money in politics, environmental concerns, things of that sort. But many of its critics have ultimately said that since it failed to adopt a single voice and a single focus and some specific proposals, that ultimately that's why it fizzled. And are you concerned that the stamp stampede may be in that respect similar? You're being too ecumenical, you're being too inclusive, and that unless you have some more specific leadership and specific goals, that your movement could gain widespread support but ultimately not achieve its goals.
I see this as really different than the Occupy movement, which was adamantly leaderless and adamantly horizontal.
And of course, all of you people in the Stamp Stampede movement are maintaining your own bathrooms.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah,
that was another issue. But when we talk together, those of us that are in somewhat of a leadership position in the movement, essentially what we're all saying is that there's several different paths to the same end that are now being blazed. And when any one of those paths starts gathering enough critical mass and momentum, that we will all go on that path.
Okay, so there will be a point at which those of you who are de facto leaders will say, okay, this is where we're going to head, and that now we're going to push ourselves over the top.
Yeah.
Very interesting. Well, you mentioned this leadership. You've also mentioned the fact that this is also a very horizontal sort of movement, very grassroots. I have to ask you, other than providing leadership, how many bills have you personally stamped?
I have not kept a formal count, but I can guarantee you that I have stamped many, many thousands of bills. Every once in a while, I'll go to the bank and, first you have to call up and make an arrangement, of course. Say I'll get 1,000 $1 bills and use that for stamping.
It's Weekly Constitutional. I'm Stuart Harris, and I'm having a fascinating discussion with Ben Cohen of Ben and Jerry's Ice Cream fame, telling me about his post-Ben and Jerry's career as a political activist who currently is trying to stamp out political corruption, or at least money in government through the Stamp Stampede campaign. After the break, we'll have our Madison Minute, and then we'll finish up our discussion with Ben Cohen. Stick around. That's money.
In the year 1852, according to a contemporary account published in the Fredericksburg News, the Madison Plantation records and private documents were burned. During the years following the sale of Montpelier in 1844, John Payne Todd, the only son of Dolly Madison from her first marriage, collected the vast majority of the Madison documents, squirreling them away in his perpetually half-finished home of Toddsburg. Upon his passing in 1852, the surviving nephews and nieces, concerned about the lifestyle that John Payne Todd had led and the impact that might have on the memory and legacy of James and Dolly Madison, destroyed most of these records. Thus, while the political career of James Madison and Dolly's role as First Lady are frequently commented on, we actually know very little about their day-to-day lives. With a Madison Minute, I'm Jim Blaylock.
Well, today marks the one-year anniversary of the landmark Supreme Court decision Citizens United versus Federal Election Commission. The ruling lifted a 63-year-old ban prohibiting corporations, trade associations, and unions from spending unlimited amounts of money on political advocacy. A number of national and local organizations are planning rallies across the country today to protest the decision. On Thursday,
this week on Q&A, our guest is Supreme Court Associate Justice Antonin Scalia.
Artificial person canon.
Right.
Citizens United. That's another one that's created a storm.
Well, person isn't used in the First Amendment. I mean, Congress shall make no law abridging the freedom of speech.
But what is your, maybe you don't even want to touch this, but what is your, as a person, are you worried at all that there's too much money in politics?
No, you know, I really don't. I forget what the figures are, but I think we spend less on our presidential campaigns each year when there's a presidential election than the country spends on cosmetics. I mean,
You know, people are worried that the corporations now can buy.
I think this is a real condemnation. If you believe that, we ought to go back to monarchy, that the people are such sheep that they just swallow whatever they see on television or read in the newspapers. No, the premise of democracy is that people are intelligent and can discern the true from the false. At least when, as the campaign laws require, you know who is speaking. You can't speak anonymously. You have to say, identify the people that are.
But we don't know who's speaking in right now.
You know the organization that's speaking.
Not necessarily. Some of this, way this money is being raised, we will never know.
You may not know who contributes to the organization. You know the organization that's speaking.
So that's all you need to know. You don't need to know that they're hiding behind their.
Well, the press can find out. You know, who's hiding behind what.
But that's...
That's not harder, you can tell from... Anyway, look, at the premise is freedom of speech. The more speech, the better. Freedom of speech. The more speech, the better. Freedom of speech. The more speech, the better.
Interesting recent poll done by Greenberg, Quinlan, Rosner. They asked people what they thought about the Supreme Court. Interesting results. By a 60 to 36 spread, which is significant, they said Supreme Court justices were more likely to be carrying out a personal or political agenda than working to render a fair and impartial judgment.
This Thursday, yesterday, Senator Bernie Sanders of Vermont carried the pitch higher, proposing his version of a constitutional amendment that simply establishes that corporations, by law, are not people.
In my view, a corporation is not a person. The Supreme Court says that these corporations have a constitutionally protected right to spend shareholders' money to dominate an election as if they were real live persons.
Senator, what must be done as the momentum is obviously accelerating to support not only you, but all of us in this country who are desperate to see this debate for the 28th Amendment proceed?
Our job is to educate, to organize, and to put as much pressure on Congress so that they, in fact, pass a constitutional amendment to undo the disastrous, disastrous impact to our democracy that Citizens United has done. Here's what it is. Right now, because of the Citizens United 5-4 Supreme Court decision, you can have a group of billionaires, a group of corporate executives sitting around the room, and they're going to say, look, here's a guy in California, here's somebody in Nevada, here's somebody in Oregon who's opposing our interests. They want to protect the middle class and working families. They don't want to give the rich tax breaks. We have got to defeat that person. All right, I want you to put $20 million in California, $15 million in Oregon, $10 million into Ohio. They do this, Dylan, without disclosure. So somebody goes home, they turn on the TV, there's an ad by Citizens for a Better America or whatever, attacking a candidate or supporting another candidate. Unlimited sums of money from corporations who go into their own corporate treasuries, from the richest people in this country, without any disclosure, bombarding the airwaves, electing those people who support big money, trying to defeat those of us who support working class and middle class men.
And now let's finish up our discussion with Ben Cohen, who participates in something called the Stamp Stampede, where he stamps messages against money in politics on money itself. Before the break, Ben was telling us that he's stamped a number of bills himself, and indeed he was about to mention that doing so can really change your life.
You know, I mean, the interesting thing about people that are stamping money and getting into this is that you kind of stop using your credit cards so much. You know,
oh, really?
Right, because you want to put as much stamp currency out there as you can, so you end up patronizing your local ATM machine a lot more frequently. So at the beginning, I said, well, all right, I'm just going to pay for everything in stamped ones. And, you know, the problem with that is that, you know, your wad of stamped ones, carrying it around in your pocket is, you know, kind of bulky. So now I do stamped ones, fives, tens, twenties. You kind of try to pay for low price stuff with your stamped twenties, and then you get change back, and then you stamp that. And I happen to carry with me at all times the state of the art money stamping rubber stamp, the executive model pocket stamp. It fits in your pocket and it's enclosed, and then when you pull it out to use it, you kind of press this button and it flips out like a switchblade. It's very, very cool. People are very, very impressed. That's how we do it.
Very interesting. Now, the one question I promised myself I would not ask you, and I insist I am not asking this question, is what your favorite flavor of Ben and Jerry's is. So forget that question. I did not ask it.
If you want to volunteer, but
I wasn't going to ask it.
The wonderful thing about that question is that I know the answer to it. I'm really good at it. Mm-hmm. It's Cherry Garcia, but I need to tell you that I am transitioning in my life.
This is breaking news then.
This is breaking news.
Okay, we're going to publicize this.
I was a Cherry Garcia guy for, I don't know, 15 years at least. And recently, Ben & Jerry's has come out with these core concoctions, which are... It was essentially the last flavor that Jerry and I developed when we were still involved in the company, but it got put on the shelf. And now they've been brought out. And of course, there have been some additions and improvements to it. But essentially, it's ice cream in the pint. And down the center of this pint is this large cylinder of chocolate hazelnut fudge in one of the flavors, or salted caramel in another of the flavors. And the great thing about it is that you can kind of customize the spoonful that you're eating from the pint and decide how much of the fudge and how much of the ice cream you want in it. And it's great. You probably don't really delve into your ice cream pints in as much detail as I do, but
they don't last long enough.
Yeah.
By the time I can analyze them, I'm already digesting them.
In the world of ripples or swirls or revels or variegates, as they're known in the industry, you know, you're feeding in this ribbon of fudge or caramel at the same time that the ice cream is going in, and it's supposed to be this defined little ripple, and it never really works. You know, the ripple kind of disperses, and you don't have a discrete ribbon of fudge versus the ice cream. It just kind of mushes into the ice cream, and it gets called vanilla fudge, but it's really mush. And so, you know, this distinct tube down the middle, I find to be extremely satisfying.
And this is called the core concoction. Now, is there a particular variety of core concoction that you like?
Yeah, I like the, there's one called, I think, Hazed and Confused, which has the chocolate hazelnut fudge going down the middle. And then there's a salted caramel that I think is just called salted caramel. But the problem is that I just found out they're on allocation because we can't make it fast enough. So, but I can. I got a good, you know, I got a good connection.
I'm sure you do. Well, okay, you heard it here first, folks. Ben Cohen's favorite flavor of Ben & Jerry's is now transitioning into Hazed and Confused, the core concoction. Now, the only reason I mentioned that was a question I wasn't going to ask, was because I've got a suggestion for a new flavor that will go with your Stamp Stampede campaign.
Spit it out there, Stuart.
Okay, I suggest that you have a green ice cream flavored like asparagus.
Aye.
And you call it Dirty Money.
Ooh, I love Dirty Money.
Okay, now you don't have to actually make it taste bad. That would make the strongest statement, but of course no one would buy it after, you know, one test. So you could make something that simply looks dirty. It's primarily green.
Yeah, you know, this is, you know, you might have a second job line of work that you could get into. I mean, you there's something there.
Ben, you've got my number.
I mean, but you know, when you talk about asparagus, you know, I mean, this puts you in the realm of those savory ice cream people that I just have never been able to understand.
Do you like broccoli ice cream? No, I don't. Yucky.
I mean, there's some people out there that talk about, you know, these ice cream flavors, tomato ice cream or whatever it is, that aren't sweet. And I think that's crazy. But you know, so, and the other problem with what you're talking about, but it must be overcomeable somehow.
Well, I think it could be. I think you could just make it look dirty, but make it taste really good. In fact, that could be the irony, is that, you know, money does have this deceptively sweet flavor, but yet it's still dirty.
Yeah, or maybe we can make some, you know, chocolate chips in the shape of coins or something.
You could do that. You could have another flavor. You could simply call it Greedy Politicians. Or... you know, or you could have another one simply called, you know, corporate culture or corporate corruption. I mean, I think the possibilities for leveraging ice cream flavors in your Stamp Stampede campaign are infinite.
This is interesting. I mean, the problem with green is that there really aren't any natural flavors that end up coming out green. You know, pistachio, natural pistachio ice cream is white. Natural mint ice cream is white. I mean, that was a big problem that we had when we first started out, was that, you know, people would look at our ice cream flavors in the dipping case and, you know, as opposed to the rainbow of colors that you get when you go to a Baskin Robbins, they essentially all look the same. They're all kind of beige, except for the chocolate ones. So, but, you know, this is a worthwhile challenge because I think the name of the ice cream, Dirty Money, is so good that I'm gonna work on it. There must be some kind of weird rainforest green fruit somewhere.
Avocados, perhaps.
Yeah, yeah.
Those are really more California than rainforest. But look, I trust you, Ben. I think your innovative juices are already flowing.
So
I'm going to be looking for dirty money on my in my grocer's freezer within the next year.
All right. Within the next year. You know, now with the big corporation running the ice cream company, I think new flavors take like 2 years to come out.
Oh well, just another cost of corporate culture. But hey, before I let you go, how can people get in touch with Stamp Stampede? How can they get involved?
Just go to stampstampede.org. You can find out about the campaign. You can purchase your very own stamp online. And Stuart, for you, for your audience, in return for you coming up with this great flavor idea, I'm going to pass along my personal 50% discount code.
Okay, wait a second. Everybody get your pencils and pens ready or get on your iPad and get ready to take this down. Okay, go ahead, Ben.
It's kind of easy to remember. It's BC, that's Ben Cohen, BC25.
BC25, and that will get them their personal stamps at a 50% discount.
Yep, it's an incredible deal. Available at this time, at this moment, only on the Stuart Harris Show. what more could you ask for?
Okay, and they should definitely mention your weekly constitutional whenever they go and order those online. And what is the website address?
Stampstampede.org.
Stampstampede.org. Well, Ben Cohen of Ben and Jerry's fame, I must say that this has to have been clearly one of the one of the sweetest interviews I've ever had.
Thank you so much, Stuart. It's been a pleasure.
Thanks for your time.
And that's our show. Wasn't Ben Cohen just absolutely fantastic? You know, maybe it's not our show because it's something I'm going to do here, something that I rarely do. As you might guess, my interviews typically begin with a little bit of preliminary stuff where I talk to my guest about, you know, how we're going to go about the interview and some of the technical aspects of it. And I routinely cut that stuff out before we put interviews on the air. But there was one point where Ben did – actually, there were several points where Ben did things that were rather unusual. At one point, he noted that he was looking at me on the internet. He was looking at a picture of me on the internet, and he made some comments about my personal appearance, which I think you'd enjoy hearing. So here they are.
Yo, Stuart.
Hey, Ben. How are you?
What's up, babe?
Well, that's going to be what I'm going to be asking you. But on my end, I'm just extremely thrilled. I've been eating your ice cream for years, and this is just a treat for me.
Well, excellent. Thank you for consuming. I'm looking at your photo on my screen. It looks like the ice cream consumption has served you very well.
Oh, aren't you kind to say so, sir? Yes, indeed. As I like to say, I'm carrying around a lot of past sins.
You look good, pal. I like your beard is well trimmed. I like those frameless glasses. Yeah,
I appreciate that.
Yeah, you know, you look earnest, sincere, you know. You look like a good rocking dude.
If loving you was ice cream, oh, I could be the ice cream man.
You know, I have a son named Ben, and Ben is about 20 years old. And whenever Ben, my Ben, comments on my appearance, it's not nearly that nice. But here's now a message for my Ben. Hey, guess what, Ben? Ben Cohen thinks I'm a good rocking dude. So there. And that is actually our show. Our executive producer is Wayne Winkler. Our scheduler is Carol Hutchinson. Our distribution engineers are Nick Rosa and Bob Hoffman. Our music is by the Watauga, Fife, and Drum Corps. My name is Stuart Harris, and remember, you are a part, a tasty part, of the American experiment.